Shalom, Hadvarniks. Welcome to Hadvar Messianic Ministries and our School of Biblical and Jewish Studies. We're studying the prophet Ezekiel. This is the 2022 edition, and we're in session 39. Session 39 begins in chapter 40 and verse 13. So let's go ahead and review where we were last session quickly. Well, last session we looked at the tabernacles and the temples with the aid of a timeline. We began in 1446 BC when the tabernacle was constructed. It was constructed at the base of Mount Sinai. It lasted until 960 BC. And here's an illustration of the Timnah Park tabernacle model. This is perhaps the way it looked. Then we moved on to 960 BC in our timeline, and we came to the first temple, which was built by Solomon. It lasted from 960 BC until 586 BC. And again, here's a possible drawing of how it could have looked. Could have been constructed in this manner. Then we went down the timeline again, and we noted there was no temple during the 70-year exile to Babylon from 586 BC to 516 BC. However, in 516 BC, the second temple was erected by Zerubbabel. It was enlarged by Herod, and this is the temple that was visited by Yeshua. It lasted from 516 BC to 70 AD, and then it was destroyed by the Romans. And so Zerubbabel's temple, the rebuilt temple, was very, very modest. But over the years, improvements and renovations occurred. And finally, King Herod came along, and he did a real bang-up job. He turned the temple and the temple platform into one of the wonders of the world. But then, as I said, it was destroyed in 70 AD by the Romans. And here's an illustration of the Romans burning the temple and all its buildings to the ground, sweeping the Temple Mount clear. And so, as we go down our timeline, there's no temple on the Temple Mount today. Today, the Dome of the Rock, which is an Islamic shrine, sits in the place of where the temple probably sat. So that's been 70 AD to the present. There's been no temple on the Temple Mount from 70 AD to the present. So here's a drawing of the Temple Mount swept clean by the Romans. And the Arabs came in, the Islamists came in and built some structures around the south and west end. And then they built the Dome of the Rock. And eventually the Al-Aqsa Mosque was built on the Temple Mount. Now, when we move to down the timeline to the tribulation, we come to the tribulation temple. This temple will be up and functioning by the middle of the tribulation, and it will stand during the tribulation. But then when Yeshua comes, it will be destroyed. And Yeshua then will build the fourth, or the millennial temple, that'll stand during the Messianic Kingdom. After the 1,000-year Messianic Kingdom, here's the millennial temple that we're exploring today as we look through our study in Ezekiel. And back to our timeline. As we come now from the end of the 1,000-year kingdom, we come into the eternal state, and there will be no physical temple in the eternal state. We learn that the Lord God and the Lamb are the temple. So Ezekiel started on a journey. We saw his journey to the land of Israel. He's living in Babylonia, and south of the capital of Babylon in Tel Aviv, and he's taken in a vision to the land of Israel. He's taken to a very, very high mountain, he says, to a very, very high mountain. And, of course, that mountain is Millennial Mount Zion, where he sets down close to the temple. And as he looks south, he sees a structure that looks like a city to the south, and that would be the Millennial Jerusalem. And that's the point of Psalm 48, 1 and 2. Psalm 48, 1 and 2 read, "Great is the Lord and greatly to be praised in the city of our God, his holy mountain." So during the Messianic Kingdom, this will be Millennial Mount Zion. It's described, beautiful in elevation. That's because it's the highest mountain in the world. The joy of the whole earth, that's because it's the most important mountain in the world. And which mountain is this? It's Mount Zion in the far north. So it's Millennial Mount Zion, and our psalmist is standing south of Millennial Mount Zion. He is looking north, and he's looking at the south end of the of the mountain, and the city of Jerusalem is located on the south end. So this is the perspective of the psalm. In the south, looking north at the south end of Millennial Mount Zion. And what is he seeing? He's seeing the city of the great king. That's Millennial Jerusalem. So it's a very important psalm for the Messianic kingdom. Then we began to explore Ezekiel's temple in detail. Ezekiel began on the outside of the temple where the angel explained to him the wall all around the temple, surrounding the temple complex. And here's an illustration of that wall, 6 cubits by 6 cubits. And he started on the outside of the temple, but then Ezekiel and the angel moved up the stairs and looked at the first entranceway, the eastern gateway to the temple. And we started in the outer threshold, and here you can look down the gateway from the outer threshold in red to that strip of red down at the end of the gateway, which is the inner threshold. And beyond that is the gateway to the inner court. You have to cross the outer court, and then you come to the gateway for the inner court. So we looked at the gateway. The gateway contain guard rooms, 5 cubits between each guard room. Each guard room, one reed by one reed. And then we went all the way through the gateway, and we looked at the far exit, or I should say the exit to the gateway, and we examined the door jambs, measured them, and we looked through the door where the exit was, and we measured that area, and we looked through the door, and we saw beyond that, the outer court, and beyond the outer court, the structures that frame the inner court. Well, that brings us to the new material. We've been looking at the gateway, the guard rooms, all its construction. And now we take a look at the width of the gate in verse 13. He measured the gate from the roof of one guard room to the roof of the other, a width of 25 cubits from one door to the door opposite. So we're looking at the entire temple gate structure here, the entire eastern gate from side to side, from north to south, and that's measured by the angel, and that's 25 cubits. 25 cubits, about 44 feet, something like that, in total width. Now Ezekiel mentions that there's door opposite door, and this suggests that a door led from each of the side rooms onto the outer court. So the door of the cell by the gate on the south was opposite the door of the cell by the gate on the north, is just what he's saying. It's a symmetrical gateway, a symmetrical system. Then in verse 14, we move to examine the pillars. He made the side pillars 60 cubits high. The gate extended round about to the side pillar of the courtyard. So 60 cubits is a good long distance. It's about 105 feet. So here are the pillars of the gateway. The gateway is apparently 105 feet tall. And this is one of the options that we can determine how the gateway looked. Here's another option, the way this artist feels the gateway might have looked, with these three east, south, and north gates. And here's another artist option. And here is just the pillars at the exit of the gate that are 105 feet tall. So it could go either way. We'll have to see when we get to the temple itself. We'll see exactly how God has it laid out for us. As we come to verse 15, Ezekiel measures the length of the gate. From the front of the entrance gate to the front of the inner porch of the gate was 50 cubits. All right, so again, we're looking at the entire gate system. This time, we're looking from east to west, and that's 50 cubits from one end of the gate to the other. That's the entire length of the gateway. And here's another rendition of the length of the gate. You can see the wording 50 cubits on the top. So this is the length of the entire gate, eastern gate. Now as we come to verse 16, we take a look at the windows in the guard rooms. And there were shuttered windows looking toward the guard rooms and toward their side pillars within the gate all around, and likewise for the porches. And there were windows all around inside, and on each side pillar were palm tree ornaments. So the windows are marked in this diagram with the little O. Those little squares with the O's in them would represent the windows. Now, there are various renderings for this word windows in the different versions of the Bible. Some render the term closed windows. Some say shut windows. Others say shuttered windows of lattice work because there's no glass. And all of those carry the same idea of some kind of a cover over the windows. But there's another possibility, too, and it may mean narrowed windows, windows starting wide and narrowing down. So we'll have to see again when we get to the Messianic Temple and we walk through that eastern gate. We're going to have to take a look at those windows and see exactly how they're made. And upon each post, he says, there were palm tree decorations. And here's the palm tree decorations in this illustration on this eastern gate. Now, these palm trees also decorated the Solomonic Temple. Here's a drawing of Solomon's temple, and the architect has drawn palm trees on the walls of the holy place and the Holy of Holies. So this is a very common decorative motif. You can read about it in 1 Kings 6, 1 Kings 7, 2 Chronicles 3, 5 as well. Now, palm trees. Palm trees have a number of symbolic meanings in Scripture. First of all, the palm trees are symbolic of beauty, as in Song of Solomon 7:7. Solomon says to Shulamit, his bride, "Your stature is like a palm tree." And he's complimenting her. She is tall and slim. Tall and slim. So it's a picture of beauty. Also, it's a symbol of the blessings of righteousness. For example, Psalm 92, verses 12 and 13, "The righteous man will flourish like the palm tree. He will grow like a cedar in Lebanon, planted in the house of the Lord. They will flourish in the courts of our God." So there's the benefits of righteousness, to flourish in the sight of God and be tended by God and be benefited by God. And Revelation 7:9 carries the same symbol. "After these things I looked, and behold, a great multitude, which no one could count, from every tribe, from every nation and tribe and peoples and tongues, standing before the throne and before the Lord, before the Lamb, clothed in white robes, and palm branches were in their hands." So here's the righteous worshiping the Lord with the palm branches, symbol of the blessings of righteousness. And finally, palms, palm leaves, and palm trees are a symbol of the Feast of Tabernacles. And we see this in Leviticus 23:40 and Nehemiah 8:15. "Now on the first day," and this is a reference to the first day of the Feast of Tabernacles, "you shall take for yourselves the foliage of beautiful trees, palm branches, and boughs of leafy trees and willows of the brook, and you shall rejoice before the Lord your God for 7 days. So palm branches are associated with the Feast of Tabernacles. And that's the exact same association that comes forth in John 12, verse 13. In John 12, the people are welcoming Yeshua into Jerusalem. They're welcoming him as the Messianic King, and as the Messianic King, they're expecting him to set up the Feast of Tabernacles, to set up the kingdom, and the kingdom will be fulfilled by the Feast of Tabernacles. And the Feast of Tabernacles, of course, palms as a symbol associated with it. So that's the background to John 12, 13. The people are looking for Messiah to set up the Messianic kingdom. And so the people took the branches of palm trees, which represents the Feast of Tabernacles, which will be fulfilled by the Messianic kingdom. And they went out to meet him, to meet Yeshua, and they began to shout, "Hosanna, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord, even the King of Israel." He's going to set up the Messianic kingdom. So there's the association of the palm leaves, palm trees, with the triumphal entry. And again, the Feast of Tabernacles will be fulfilled by the kingdom in Zechariah 14, it will come about that any who are left of all the nations that went against Jerusalem will go up from year to year to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, and celebrate the Feast of Booths, or the Feast of Tabernacles. So it all is connected together. Now, the gates of the Millennial Temple are patterned after the Solomonic City wall gates that have been discovered by architects. Now, here's the Solomonic gates at Megiddo, and when you go to Israel, you can walk through this entranceway, and you can see the guard rooms on either side of the gate. Now, this is a nice photograph with the guard rooms, the gate chambers, the guard rooms of the gate illustrated or drawn in to show you how they would have looked in pristine condition. So here we have the entrance to the city. I don't know which city this is, but now here are the gateway, and you see the guard rooms or the gate chambers, three of them along the one side of the gateway. And then on the other side, the gate chambers are also visible, but they're in their ruined state. Here's one gate chamber, and here's a second gate chamber, and a third gate chamber. But this is a very typical construction of city gates during the ancient times, and it will be carried forward into the millennium with the gates of the Millennial Temple. All right, so we've completed a detailed look at the outer gates at this time. Now we move through the gate into the outer court, And we'll see that 30 chambers and a pavement are prominent features of the outer court. So let's begin with the general description in verse 17. Then he brought me into the outer court, and behold, there were chambers and a pavement made for the court all around. 30 chambers faced the pavement. So he brought me into the outer court. So Ezekiel is outside the temple. He goes up the stairs. He's given us a description of the eastern gate. And now the angel leads him into the outer court. He's now standing in the outer court. And he notices two items that are very significant for the outer court. First of all, the chambers. And here are the chambers that he's talking about. Chambers all around the outer court. And then a pavement. And the red here, the pink, the red, illustrates the pavement very nicely. So the temple does not have a dirt floor or a rough natural stone floor, but a smooth finished pavement, probably made out of some sort of tile or something like that. And this is very similar to the Solomonic temple, 2 Chronicles 7:3. Now all the sons of Israel, seeing the fire come down and the glory of the Lord upon the house, bowed down on the pavement. This is the Solomonic temple. And their faces to the ground, and they worshiped and gave praise to the Lord, saying, truly he is good, truly his loving kindness is everlasting. Now, like I said, this pavement could be made of large tiles, or it could even be a possibility, a mosaic pavement. Esther 1:6 would be a cross reference there, referring to the Persian palace in Susa. And here is the pavement of a Roman villa in Sepphoris in the Galilee, and it is a mosaic pavement. It's been entitled the Mona Lisa of Galilee because the face of a beautiful woman has been preserved. Probably not deliberately, as you can see, there's damage to the floor all around her face, but her face is kind of fetching and enigmatic, isn't it? Who was she? She's the Mona Lisa of Galilee. So this is all done by mosaic. And when you go to Israel, be sure to go to Sepphoris and see this, the floor of this Roman villa with its mosaic pavement, and see the Mona Lisa, pay a visit to the Mona Lisa of Galilee in person. So these are very common architectural features in ancient times. We'll have to see what looks like in the Millennial Kingdom when we get there. All right, now the chambers are 30 chambers on the pavement. So 30 chambers are built on the stone pavement and were situated against the surrounding wall, the 30 chambers. And now the exact use for these chambers is not stated, so we don't know exactly what their use was. Now our attention is directed to the pavement in verse 18. The pavement, that is the lower pavement, was by the side of the gates corresponding to the length of the gates. So he calls the pavement the lower pavement here. It's in the outer court. And so this pavement was physically lower than the pavement of the inner court. So we had to go up from ground level lower court pavement. And then we'll have to go up from the lower court pavement to the inner court pavement. So there we go, the lower court pavement, lower than the inner court. Verse 19, we get the measure. Then he measured the width of the front of the lower gate to the front of the exterior of the inner court, 100 cubits on the east and on the north. So here we're at the temple, and the angel measures the distance between the outer gate and the inner gate, and it's 175 feet or 100 cubits, 100 cubits. And he says both on the east and on the north. So we also know that there'll be 175 foot distance here to the north. And we'll learn later that this will be true of all three gates, 175 feet. So it's a very symmetrical temple. Now as we get to verse 20, we move to the northern gate. As for the gate of the outer court, which faced to the north, he measured its length and its width. And the length and its width will be the same. So he moves now from in front of the eastern gate. He moves north a half mile, another half mile over to the northern outer gate. And remember, this is a 1 square mile temple. So he's got a bit of a walk there. This is a huge temple. So he's now at the northern gate, and the measurements are going to be the same as the eastern gate. As we turn to verse 21, we get a look at the interior details. It had 3 guard rooms on each side, and its side pillars and its porches had the same measurement as the first gate. Its length was 50 cubits, its width 25 cubits. So we're looking at the gate systems again, and we see that this northern exterior gate, outer gate, is exactly the same as the eastern gate that he measured in such detail. All right, now he goes over the exterior details for us in verse 22. Its windows and its porches and its palm tree ornaments had the same measurements as the gate which faced toward the east, and it was reached by 7 steps, and its porch was in front of them. And so the measurements are the same as the eastern gate. He just mentions, in addition, the 7 steps. So the ground level was... And here we go. Here's the 7 steps right there. The ground level is 7 steps below the outer court. And so that distance is about 4 feet in American terms, about 4 feet above the ground level. And then he continues to measure the outer court in verse 23. The inner court had a gate opposite the gate on the north as well as the gate on the east. And he measured 100 cubits from gate to gate. So he measured from gate to gate, and again, 100 cubits or 175 feet. And now our attention is taken to the southern gate in verse 24. Then he led me toward the south, and behold, there was a gate toward the south, and he measured its side pillars and its porches according to those same measurements. So he led me toward the south. So here he's on the northern end of this 1 square mile Temple Mount, and he has to do a bit of a hike. It'll take him a few minutes to get around to the southern gate. I'm sure it was a leisurely stroll. I'm sure they weren't in a big hurry. And so now he's at the southern gate. This is the gate that we're concerned with. And he measures it, and it's the same as the north and the east gates. Now, in verse 25, our attention is directed to the windows. And the gate and its porches had windows all around like those other windows. The length was 50 cubits and the width 25 cubits. So again, the measurements are identical. This southern gate is identical to the other gates. As we move to verse 26, he describes the steps and the porches. There were seven steps going up to it, and its porches were in front of them, and it had palm tree ornaments on its side pillars, one on each side. So again, this description is exactly the same as the other gates. And the measure of the outer court then, in verse 27, the inner court had a gate toward the south, and he measured the gate from gate to gate toward the south, 100 cubits. And so again, we get the measure, and it's 175 feet or 100 cubits from gate to gate. At this point, we begin to focus our attention on the inner court. We're standing at the southern gate now, and we read in verse 28, "Then he brought me to the inner court by the south gate, and he measured the south gate according to those same measurements." So he's here near the south outer gate, and now the angel takes him to the south inner gate. Okay, he's now at the inner gate of the south. Now, there's no mention of an inner wall here, but these gates would require a wall through which to pass. We would pass through using the gate. So there must be a wall there that the gate goes through. Now, from his position at the south side of the outer court, Ezekiel entered the inner court through the south gate. So now he moves through the south gate into the inner court. And he measures the south gate according to these measures. So again, here's the gate that he's measuring. The design is exactly the same as the outer gates. Now, the gates are all directly opposite each other and separated by 100 cubits. The gates of the outer and inner walls correspond to each other in every respect except for the position of the porch. One is on the inner porch and one is on the outer porch. Now, the porch of the outer court is on the inner end of the gateway. And so here is the outer porch, the outer gate porch. And the porch of the inner court is situated on the outer end facing the porch. So here is the inner gate porch. And so there's two porches face each other. That's the only difference. All right, now we move to verse 29. And as we get to verse 29, Ezekiel now focuses on the inner details. Its guard rooms also, its side pillars and its porches were according to these same measurements. And the gate and its porches had windows all around. It was 50 cubits long and 25 cubits wide. So the details of the inner gate are exactly the same as the details of the outer gates. And again, 50 cubits by 25 cubits, about 88 feet long and about 44 feet wide. Then we come to verse 30 and we come to the porches. There were porches all around, 25 cubits long and 5 cubits wide. Now these porches are built either against or into the walls of the inner court. And then the outer details are described in verse 31. Its porches were toward the outer court. The palm tree ornaments were on its side pillars, and its stairway had 8 steps. So here's the first difference. The decorations face the outer court. So the decorations on the outer gate face the decorations on the inner gate. That was the palm trees. The palm tree decorations faced each other. And then he mentions the ascent had 8 steps. This is a second difference. The outer court had 7 steps going up to it. The inner court was raised above the outer court by 8 steps. So here's the 8 steps, about 4.5 feet above the outer court. Now we get a look at this eastern gate of the eastern inner gate. So in verse 32, we move to the gate. He brought me into the inner court toward the east, and he measured the gate according to the same measurements. So here's Ezekiel, and he's just brought over here in front of the eastern inner gate. And he He measures the gate according to these measures. In other words, he's saying the gate measurements are exactly the same as all the other gates. We move to verse 33 and we look at the inner details. Its guard rooms also, its side pillars and its porches were according to those same measurements. And the gate and its porches had windows all around. It was 50 cubits long and 25 cubits wide. So it's again identical with the inner southern gate. Of course, all the gates at this point have all been identical, whether it be an outer gate or an inner gate. So now he shares the inner details with us again in verse 34. The porches were toward the outer court. The palm tree ornaments were on its side pillars on each side, and its stairway had 8 steps. So this is exactly the same as the southern inner gate. Then he's taken to the northern inner gate in verse 35. Then he brought me to the north gate, and he measured it according to these same measurements. So Ezekiel is here in front of the inner eastern gate. So now the angel moves him over to the inner northern gate. And he measures that inner northern gate, and everything is exactly the same measure. And now we get a look in verse 36 of the inner details. With its guard rooms, its side pillars, and its porches, and the gate had windows all around. The length was 50 cubits, and the width 25 cubits. So it's identical with the other gates. So our God is a gate, our God is a God of order, and here a God of symmetry. He does everything in good order, decency and in good order, doesn't he? And then as we get to verse 37, the outer details are described one more time. Its side pillars were toward the outer court, and palm tree ornaments were on its side pillars on each side, and its stairway had 8 steps. Again, an identical design. So that takes care of the inner and outer gates. Now we begin to look at the chambers and tables for the preparation of the sacrifices in verses 38 to 43. We begin in chapter 40, verse 38, with the rinsing chamber. A chamber with its doorway was by the side pillars at the gates. There they rinse the burnt offering. So we're here at the northern inner gate, and I think that he's talking about this chamber right here, right beside the gate. The chamber was for the priests who washed the burnt offering. And again, it was probably in the inner court, right near the inner north gate. And the reasons for that conclusion is, first of all, the context, because immediately before this, Ezekiel was at the northern inner gate. And this is also parallel with the tabernacle. At the tabernacle, the sacrifices were killed north of the altar, Leviticus 1:11. And he shall slay it on the side of the altar northward before the Lord, and Aaron's sons, the priests, shall sprinkle its blood around on the altar. So the millennial sacrificial system may parallel the Mosaic system in this detail. So that's the rinsing chamber right next to the northern inner gate. Then we look at the 8 slaughter tables. We look at the first 4 tables in verse 39. In the porch of the gate were 2 tables on each side, on which to slaughter the burnt offerings, the sin offerings, and the guilt offerings. So there's 4 tables associated with the gate. And the tables are apparently inside the gate somewhere. So there's 2 tables on one side, 2 tables on the other side of the gate. And the purpose, of course, is to slay the animals on these tables. The animals were laid on these tables and were sacrificed. And the 3 sacrifices are mentioned. There'll be a burnt offering, a sin offering, and a guilt offering. So there will be a very, very small measure of sin in the kingdom. And we'll get more details about that as we continue on through the book. Then in verse 40, we get a look at the second 4 tables. On the outer side, as one went up to the gateway toward the north, there were 2 tables. And on the other side of the porch of the gate were 2 tables. So these apparently are outside the gate to the north. And in verse 41, we get the total. Four tables were on each side next to the gate, or eight tables on which they slaughter the sacrifice. So eight tables in all are used for the slaughtering of the sacrifices. The animals were placed on these tables, and the tables are located somewhere in this northern gate. We don't know exactly how, where, exactly the exact position, but they're associated with that northern inner gate. Next, then we encounter four tables for the implements of sacrifice in verses 42 and 43. We begin with the measurements in verse 42. For the burnt offering, there were four tables of hewn stone, a cubit and a half long, a cubit and a half wide, and one cubit high, on which they lay the instruments with which they slaughter the burnt offering and the sacrifice. So there are four tables for the burnt offering, and they're made of hewn stone. And this is possibly one of the tables, an illustration of one of the tables. They're a cubit and a half long and a cubit and a half broad. So they're almost a yard square. That's about 32 inches square, about a yard square. And then they are also one cubit high, which is about 21, 22 inches. So about a yard square and about 2 feet high. And they laid the instruments wherewith they slew the burnt offerings and the sacrifices on these tables. For example, they would have laid the knives there that were used for cutting the jugular vein of the animals. And they would have had the mitzrak there. Now the mitzrak is the instrument that's used to catch the blood of the animals once the jugular vein is cut. And this mitzrak has been made by the Temple Institute. And when you go to Israel, visit the Temple Institute and you'll see the mitzrak. And this is not a display item. The rabbis fully intend to use this mitzrak in the Third Temple as part of the sacrificial service. So the mitzrak would catch the blood that poured out of the jugular vein. And then the priest would take the mitzrak over to the altar and he would dash the blood either on the sides of the altar, pour it out at the base of the altar, depending on exactly what was going on. Now the other utensils are mentioned in verse 43. The double hooks, one hand breadth in length, were installed in the house all around, and on the tables was the flesh of the offering. So these hooks are used for the flaying of the sacrifices, and in this illustration you can see the hooks, and right beside that pillar you can see a Levite processing a sacrifice. Next, our attention is turned to the chambers for the priests, and this is in verse 44. From the outside to the inner gate were chambers for the singers in the inner court, one of which was at the side of the north gate, with its front toward the south, and one at the side of the south gate facing toward the north. So these chambers were not within the gateway, but they were within the inner court. They're located on the south side of the inner court. And now, they're associated on the north and south sides of the inner court. So our first chamber to investigate is the chamber on the north side in verse 45. He said to me, "This is the chamber which faces toward the south, intended for the priests who keep the charge of the temple." So the chamber faces toward the south, so that means it's on the north side. So it is probably this chamber right here, this chamber here. The north side was for priests who were responsible for the day-to-day running of the temple. We'll learn that in Ezekiel 44, verses 10 through 14. These were non-Zadokite priests. They were members of the tribe of Levi, but not members of the Levitical family descended from Zadok. And now our attention is directed toward the south side in verse 46. But the chamber which faces toward the north is for the priests who keep charge of the altar. These are the sons of Zadok, who from the sons of Levi come near to the Lord to minister to him. Okay, so these chambers face toward the north, so that means they are on the south side, and it would probably be this chamber right here. Now, this is for the priests, who are the keepers of the altar. They're in charge of the altar. They're in charge of the actual sacrifice. These are the sons of Zadok. They come from among the sons of Levi. They are a segment of the tribe of Levi, but they became prominent when the house of Eli was set aside for unfaithfulness in 2 Samuel 2, verse 27 through 36. Then a man of God came to Eli and said to him, I will raise up for myself a faithful priest who will do according to what is in my heart and in my soul. And I will build him an enduring house, and he will walk before my anointed always. Everyone who is left in your house will come and bow down to him for a piece of silver or a loaf of bread and say, please assign to me one of the priest's offices so that I may eat a piece of bread. Now, Zadok was a priest during David and Solomon's generation, and the Zadokian priests remained faithful to David and Solomon. Zadok led the way. He was faithful to David and Solomon, and we see this in 1 Kings 1:8. But Zadok the priest, Benaiah the son of Jehoiada, Natan the prophet, Shimei, Re'ei, and the mighty men who belonged to David were not with Adonijah. Adonijah is rebelling. And these men resist the rebellion and stay loyal to David. And Zadok the priest is one of them. Then in 1 Kings 27 we read, so Solomon dismissed Abiathar from being priest of the Lord to the Lord. Why? In order to fulfill the word of the Lord which he had spoken concerning the house of Eli in Shiloh. And in verse 35, the king, Solomon, appointed Benaiah, son of Jehoiada, over the army in his place, and the king appointed Zadok, the priest, in the place of Abiathar. And so the house of Eli has been displaced by the house of Zadok, exactly as prophesied way back in King Saul's day. Now all this is also mentioned in Ezekiel 43:19, 44:15, Ezekiel 48:11. So the purpose of the Zadokian priests, the priests of the tribe, or I should say of the family of Zadok, their purpose is to come near to the Lord and minister to him. It was only the Zadokites who will have access to the altar and to the millennial temple. Now the south side facing north was for the priests who sacrificed for the altar. Again, these are the chambers for the Zadokites. And this is repeated in Ezekiel 44, verses 15 to 31. And there's that chamber again. Now, from this point, we move around the inner court and focus on the altar of sacrifice in verse 47. He measured the court, a perfect square, 100 cubits long, 100 cubits wide. So here is the inner court. Of course, Ezekiel is standing in that circle in front of the northern inner gate. And the angel measures the court. It's a perfect square. It's 175 feet wide, 175 feet long. 100 cubits by 100 cubits. So there's the inner court. Then our attention is directed to the altar in verse 47. And the altar was in front of the temple. So here's the inner court, and this is the altar that he's talking about, right there. Now the altar stood at the center of the inner court opposite the temple, and it's placed correctly in this diagram. It'll be detailed in Ezekiel 43. So we'll look at this in more detail when we get to chapter 4. chapter 43. Now we continue by looking directly into the temple in chapter 40, verse 48 through 41:26. So the temple porch and the vestibule are the first object of our gaze and measurement. We start with the doorposts in verse 48. Then he brought me to the porch of the temple and measured each side pillar, the door jamb, in other words, of the porch. 5 cubits on each side, and the width of the gate was 3 cubits on each side. So here's Ezekiel. The angel now brings him over to get a good look at the temple proper. And this is the area we begin examining. So he measured each doorpost of the porch. And so he's talking about these door jambs here on the inside of the gate there, the inside of the door jambs. And so they are 5 cubits in width. 5 cubits. Here's one of the door jambs on the left and one of the door jambs on the right. They're both about 8 3/4 feet wide. Then the gate comes into view there it is, 5 cubits. They're both that distance wide. And then in Ezekiel chapter 40, verse 48, second part of the verse, the width of the gate was 3 cubits on each side. So now we look at the width of the gate right here. There's the distance from the wall to the opening. And it was 5 1/4 feet, 3 cubits deep, and right and left, 5 1/4 feet deep. 3 cubits on one side and 3 cubits on the other side. Now we come to verse 49 and the porch. The length of the porch was 20 cubits and the width 11 cubits, and at the stairway by which it was ascended. So this is the square that we're looking at. The length of the porch is 20 cubits from north to south, about 35 feet, and the breadth is 11 cubits, that's from east to west, about 20 feet, 19 1/4, 20 feet, something like that. And there are steps by which you go up. So the terrace of the temple is at a higher level than the inner court. It's reached by steps from the space between the altar and the porch. So there are the steps in this diagram leading up from the inner court to the temple terrace as well. And here we're looking through that doorway. We're in the doorway of the temple. We're looking out of the doorway and we're looking down on the steps located right there. Now our attention is directed to the columns in verse 49. There were columns belonging to the side pillars, one on each side. So there were columns by the posts, and what he's referring to are the columns in this diagram right here. Now here the columns are shown exterior to the doorway, one on one side of the doorway and one on the other. And we don't know for sure if these columns were freestanding or associated with the doorway. So you see diagrams with these columns built both ways. For example, here in our slide here, we have the columns associated with the doorway on the inside. And here's our two columns right here. In Solomon's temple, they were called Yachin and Boaz. And here's a picture of Solomon's temple with two freestanding columns, Yachin and Boaz, freestanding in this illustration. And here's another illustration of Solomon's temple showing it as to be much more elaborate and grander, but there's Yachin and Boaz as well, freestanding. And finally, on this description of Solomon's temple, we have Yachin and Boaz freestanding. So many artists understand him to be freestanding pillars, but here is Solomon's temple, and here they are associated as well with the gateway. Or with the entranceway of the temple. So you'll see illustrations illustrating them in both ways. Again, when we get to the Millennial Temple, we'll have to gaze through that gate, and hopefully we'll get a glimpse and we'll see how the columns are related. And we'll know exactly, or the Levites who go and minister there will tell us exactly how they're built. All right, this moves us now to chapter 41. And as we move into chapter 41, we now get to look at the holy place in chapter 41, verses 1 and 2. This is the first room of the temple. So verse 41, verse 1. Our attention is directed to the pillars. Then he brought me to the nave and measured the side pillars. 6 cubits wide on each side was the width of the side pillar. So he brought me to the temple. And so here Ezekiel moves from the gate, or from the entrance, the nave of the temple, into the first room, which is the holy place. And he was allowed to do that. The angel, he led me. We just read in verse 41, he led me into the holy place. He's allowed in there because he's a priest. And he measures the posts or the pillars, and it would be these doorposts located right here. And so there are 6 cubits broad on one side there, 10.5 feet, and 6 cubits broad on the other side, 10.5 feet. So that's the distance of the entranceway, about 10 feet. And this is the breadth of the temple. Now, the NASB renders that term side pillar. The literal Hebrew reads tent or tabernacle. So this may be referring to the tent or the tabernacle. Now, Ezekiel might be telling us that the tabernacle could fit in the doorway because the tabernacle was 15 feet wide, but we'll see the doorway is 17.5 feet wide. So maybe he's telling us that this is about the size of the tabernacle. I don't know. But he does say this is the breadth of the tent. Now, there's no mention of silver and gold as with the tabernacle or with the Solomonic temple. And so the millennial temple may be decorated with gold, but nothing is mentioned at this point. All right, let's move on to the verse 2 and the holy place. The width of the entrance was 10 cubits, and the sides of the entrance were 5 cubits on each side. And he measured the length of the nave, 40 cubits from the width, and the width, 20 cubits. So here is our holy place. This is the rectangle that we're looking at. So the breadth of the entrance was 10 cubits. Now, here is the entranceway we've just gone through. It's 17.5 feet wide. That's the breadth of the entrance. And remember, the tabernacle was 15 feet wide, so it could fit through there. And the open space of the entrance between the two side posts was 10 cubits. So here we look at the width, 10 cubits, 17.5 feet. And then we look at the distance there from front to back, 6 cubits deep. Now the sides of the entrance, now our attention is directed to the sides of the entrance here and here. And they are 5 cubits on each side, about 8¾ to 9 feet in length. And then the holy place is measured. The length is 40 cubits. Remember, here's the holy place. The length is 40 cubits, or about 70 feet. Its breadth is 20 cubits, or about 35 feet. So the dimensions are the same as that in the Solomonic temple, but they're twice that of the tabernacle. In fact, more than twice that. And here's an artist's illustration of the interior of the holy place. Again, 20 cubits by 40 cubits. And now we move to the Holy of Holies in chapter 41, verses 3 and 4. And this is the inner room. So we're going to move to this room here, the inner room, the Holy of Holies. And our attention is directed to the entrance in verse 3. Then he went inside and measured each side pillar of the doorway 2 cubits, and the doorway 6 cubits high, and the width of the doorway 7 cubits. Notice it says, then he went inward. It does not say, and he took me inside, as we've read in the holy place. Here we read, and he went inside. So it's only the angel that goes in. Now the view we're going to get is from the inside of the Holy of Holies looking out. But it's the view that the angel sees, not what Ezekiel actually sees. Why? Because Ezekiel was not the high priest. Ezekiel was a priest, so he could go into the holy place. But only the high priest was allowed into the Holy of Holies, and then only once a year, Hebrews 9, 6, and 7. Now, when these things have been so prepared, the priests were continually entering the outer tabernacle, that's the holy place, performing the divine worship. And again, Ezekiel was allowed to enter the holy place in the millennial temple. But into the second, the Holy of Holies, only the high priest enters once a year, not without taking blood, which he offers for himself and for the sins of the people committed in ignorance. So again, Ezekiel's not a high priest. He is not allowed in there. So he measures each post of the entrance, 2 cubits right here. The door jamb is 2 cubits thick. And then the entrance right here is 6 cubits, or about 10.5 feet wide. And the breadth, note, we need to note at this point that the breadth of the entryway for each room narrows as we get closer to the Holy of Holies. At the entranceway, at the nave, the entrance is 14 cubits or 24.5 feet wide. That's the foyer. And then as we move into the entrance of the holy place, from the nave to the holy place, the entrance is 10 cubits or 17.5 feet wide. And then as we move from the holy place to the Holy of Holies, the entrance is 6 cubits or 10.5 feet wide. 24.5 feet, 17.5 feet, 10.5 feet. What's the point there? The point of having this narrowing of the entranceways is to emphasize sanctity. You're moving from the common to, from the profane and the common to the holy. And so you approach with respect. That's the idea. There is a certain amount of difference and separation between the profane and the holy. Now the breadth of the entrance here is 7 cubits. So there's 7 cubits from the right and on the left. This is from the doorway to the wall. And then in verse 41, chapter 41, verse 4, he measured its length, 20 cubits, and the width, 20 cubits, before the nave, and he said, this is the most holy place. So he measures the length of the Holy of Holies, and that's 20 cubits. And then he measures the breadth of the Holy of Holies, and that's 20 cubits. That 20 cubits is 35 feet, so we've got, so far it's 35 feet by 35 feet. And then the angel names the room for us. He said, this is the most holy place. This is the Holy of Holies. And it's a square of 20 cubits. Now, if the design of the millennial temple is consistent with the design of the tabernacle and the temples, this would not be just a square of 20 cubits by 20 cubits. It would be a cube of 20 cubits by 20 cubits long and wide by 20 cubits high. So this is probably, this is what I would expect, that this is probably a perfect cube. All right, I see I'm running out of time here. So let's call it quits right here. Let's call it quits right here. And we'll pick it up next session as we look at the exterior of the temple itself. We've just taken a look at the interior of the temple proper, and so now we'll be looking at the exterior of the temple proper. So we'll start with the wall in chapter 41, verse 5. And we'll explore all the side chambers and design of the temple from the exterior. Okay, well that takes us this far on our tour of the temple. I'm so glad you've chosen to be our students. Thanks so much for studying the Word of God with us. We trust that it has been a blessing in your life. So we'll see you next session. Lahitra Ot. Lahitra Ot.